All right, guys, welcome to the fucking podcast. I have Aquilino Martin Como Fernando Exposito IV here with me, and we're going to talk about his life and some of his struggles and some of the shit he's gone through. You can call him Martin. It's okay. Martin, how you doing?
I'm doing good, buddy. How are you?
Good. I love you. Thank you for doing this with me. This is number one, dude. Numero uno, bro.
Number one, bro.
Number fucking one.
If you're not first, you're last.
Yeah. Ricky Bobby. Here we go. I'm glad you wanted to do this. I know you've been really excited because you've been telling everybody, and I've been trying to keep it on like the hush hush, but it's all good.
Dude, I love to talk about me.
Yeah. Somebody asked me to do something. So where'd you grow up?
I grew up all over. I was born in California, did a lot of struggling there when I was really young. My parents split, moved to Las Vegas, lived there for about 4 or 5 years. And then moved to Arizona. Moved all around a lot. Originally, I'm from California. Spent a lot of time in Arizona. A lot of time in Colorado and Nevada.
In California, do you have any like memories or anything? Is it just like too young, blurry images? What's up with that?
I don't. I have some like really pleasant memories, as well as I have some rather disturbing ones, you know. The earliest memory I have when I was living in California was like when my mom and dad were together and we were like cooking SpaghettiOs over the fireplace because there was no heat or power in the house, you know what I mean?
Yeah. One of my earliest memories, I've been thinking about this the last couple weeks, was I don't even know how old I was, dude, but I went down and stayed the night with you and your dad. And we get there and he hands me a fucking Natty Ice, dude, you know? And I crack it open. I took a sip. I'm like, oh, that's fucking disgusting. And I set it down next to another beer on the counter. And then I went to fucking take a drink, dude. And I grabbed the other beer and it was all fucking cigarette butts and ashes, dude. You know?
That's my dad, dude. That's my dad.
Yeah, that's one of my earliest memories, dude. I don't know how old I was. I was young. So you moved to Vegas before Arizona, right?
Right. So like when my mom and dad split, my mom took us to Vegas to go live with my grandma. And she had met another guy who soon became her next husband. We went to Vegas and lived there for a while and would like go back to see my dad every couple of weeks in California. And that was life for a while, you know. It was very abusive. Like, mom was working all the time and her husband, they were always strung out on drugs and her husband was super abusive and would like beat on me and my sister and angry all the fucking time. And that was just like normal life for me, you know, like you stay out of the way, just stay out of the way and do the best you can to please your parents and you'll be all right, dude. Like, it was rather fucking miserable.
Yeah. I think about it sometimes and I probably deserve one or two of those punches, but whatever.
Oh, more than that. Definitely more than that.
I was a fucking asshole, dude. Yeah. I was an asshole little kid. So Vegas to Arizona. How'd you get to Arizona? Why?
So when my mom and her next husband split, she met a man through work. My mom was a finance manager for many years, and she met a man through work that was a private investigator and a repo agent. And they kind of got together, and this is where like a lot of my childhood trauma stems from. They got together and he started molesting me, you know. He started molesting me and convinced my mom to move to Arizona with him because the repossessive and the finance work world were better in Arizona. So we packed up and moved to Arizona, dude. Like, once again, just moving around and uprooting me. But it was normal to me at that time. So I ended up in Arizona and my mom and my sister stayed in Las Vegas for a while, for like 2 months, while me and this man went to Arizona and stayed there until my mom and my sister came out. And soon after that, we got a house in Apache Junction, like in the middle of fucking nowhere before the 202 was even through there, on like 3.5 acres of land. And I had like everything that I wanted, dude. Like at that time, I was a spoiled brat. But I did not yet realize like why I had everything that I wanted. You know, I didn't realize that like what was happening to me was wrong. I didn't realize that like this man was taking advantage of me. I just knew like sex felt good. And it was my first experience with it. And if I wanted something, I was going to get it. But I didn't put the two together that this is why I'm getting it, is because I'm being taken advantage of.
Yeah. So that started happening before Arizona.
Right. So that started happening at the age of 7 when I was living in Henderson, Nevada. And shortly after it started happening, we moved to Arizona.
And your mom, was she just... I got a lot of love for you and your family. I don't, you know, but was your mom, was it just like she wanted to ignore it? She was trying to escape for something. She didn't see it. She didn't know. Like, and if you don't know or you don't, you know, like.
So like this has been a long going question that I've like asked myself over the years so many times, as well as like tried to go into the conversation with her. The conversation with her will never go anywhere. It always just gets shut down. But the questions that I ask myself are the same ones you just asked me. And to be honest, I don't really have a full-on answer to those questions. I just think that the drugs had a hold of her. And maybe she had her blinders up. Maybe she just didn't care. That I don't really know, but it definitely played a toll on my late teen to early adulthood years on why I chose to do some of the things I did. Like the first time I like ever smoked meth is because I wanted to understand why my mom neglected me, or like why my mom chose not to pay attention, or why was she feeling or not doing what she wasn't doing. So like that had a huge part in my early drug use, was trying to answer those questions.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, man. You know, I like I can sort of empathize maybe with like the drug use and ignoring things, you know, but I don't know, you know, I don't mean to put you on the spot.
No, and it's totally okay. I've definitely processed all these feelings through like super intense trauma therapy. I did EMDR for over a year and it really helped me. And anyone who's going through trauma, I really recommend going to EMDR and doing some EMDR therapy, because it helped me open up and lock away those feelings, you know. But through that, like my mom got her punishment. But I no longer need to punish myself, right? Trying to answer those questions or ponder what was going on through her mind, like I did for over 10 years. I worried about all that shit, you know?
Yeah.
I tried to figure it out and dissect why happened or what happened. And she went to prison for a while, and that was that. And I'm going to move on. I don't know that I've fully, like, forgiven her, but I've forgiven myself of the burden of trying to figure all of it out. You know, I just no longer care.
And I mean, she's sober now to the best of her abilities.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And she's, you know, she's in your life. That's like, forgiveness is a huge thing, man. All right. So back Arizona, Apache Junction, so there was a situation, and I'm trying to approach it delicately. If you just, you know,
I'll just fire away. Like I know what you're talking about. I was kidnapped for a while, and so he used to use me to like molest my friends as well, right? So I got into a fight at school because one of my friends that he tried to do the same thing to was telling everybody else, and it came out that this was happening, right? Some way or another, it came out, and and they took me to the police station, my sister to the police station, and they arrested my mom for like drugs or something. And they asked me a bunch of questions, right? And I denied it because like that was like my protector, so I was to protect him. And I was ashamed, right? Because they were telling me like all this stuff was wrong and I was participating in it. And I don't remember fully that they didn't tell me that it was my fault or it wasn't my fault. I was so young, so I don't remember, but I do remember that I was really scared and I just wanted to go home and to go back to what was comfortable. So I denied that it was ever going on. So they let me go back with my mom and they made my mom sign a paper, like a protection order saying she wouldn't let me go back around this man. And that night she came, she called him to come and pick me up, and he picked me up and he kidnapped me. He dropped my friend off like all the way across the valley, down in Maricopa County, and he took me to Oklahoma, dude. And that's what it was. When I got to Oklahoma, I had ran across the street to a gas station. One thing led to another. I was on a plane back to Arizona to the police station, and it came out, right? But driving across the country, I was like seeing my name on billboards, the color of the truck that we were once in, and like everyone was scared, and I was scared, right? So yeah. I go back and I sit in an interview for like 13 hours, and I let it all spill out. But what let me let it spill out is I heard my sister on a videotape or on a audio recording, and she was expressing that she knew it was going on. So then I didn't feel alone. And my sister was my best friend at the time. She was my protector. My mom was always gone, like running and gunning, using drugs and quote unquote working all the time and doing whatever she was doing, right? So like my sister was my second mom. So to hear her speak out about it first made me more comfortable. So I sat through that interview, right? And I did that, and a week and a half later, after sitting in a group home for a little while, my dad came and picked me up, dude, and I went to California to live with my dad.
Yeah, I remember, like, very vividly, the morning, like, the family found out, you know, I was staying at a friend's house, and the night before I had had like, I was in sixth grade. We stole some of my buddy's parents' booze. We stole this little fucking like Segway scooter thing, and we were romping it in the gravel pits, you know? And like, we broke into this guy's truck, and you know, I'm drunk, dude. I'm 13. I started trying to jerk off in his car.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. You know?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, dude. And then he fucking drags me out. We go inside, I pass out, and like I wake up to his parents being like, you need to talk to your dad, you know? And like he told me, and I don't like I know what happened, but I don't remember exactly like how I feel. It just kind of like it's like a third person view, you know. Started crying. My dad came and picked us up, and I feel like it was like a good like week or 2 weeks that like nobody knew if you were alive, if you know what was going on. Yeah, man. I'm glad you're here today.
You know? Oh, yeah, me too.
You're one of my favorite people on this planet, and I don't talk to many people, dude, so, you know?
The only person.
Yeah. Pretty much. So you go back to your dad. Oh, I love your dad, dude. I got a lot of love for your dad. He's a good person.
Dude, although like my dad has his struggles, my dad is my all-time hero.
Yeah.
Regardless of like anything that I put my family through or anything I was going through, like, my dad was there through thick and thin, and he did what he felt was best for me and what he felt that I needed at the time, you know? And it led me to where I am now. And today I have a beautiful life, you know what I mean? My dad may have his struggles, but he still has, like, an awesome heart, you know what I mean? Everyone has their struggles. Some are just a little deeper than others, and some are a little harder to get out of, you know, for certain people. But my dad is, like, my dad is my hero. My dad is my rock. If I can amount to be a minuscule of the man that he is, I have arrived.
To the moon, baby.
To the moon.
I'm going to be on the moon, baby. I'm going to be on the moon. Should have last week, bro.
Okay, so I know you also. You go back with your dad in California. How does that turn out?
Dude, huge culture shock. So like I said a few minutes ago, I had had everything I ever wanted, you know, like up to this point, like materialistic, right? I had everything I wanted, a master bedroom with a king size bed and cars in my name. I lived on 3.5 acres of land. I would go in the backyard and just drive cars and do donuts and wreck them into trees and shit. And there was no consequences, right? I would just do whatever I wanted to me and my sister went to go live with my dad. And we went to a garage floor in Riverside, California with my dad, his wife, and 3 stepbrothers. And I had nothing but the clothes that were on my back, a teddy bear that I had gotten from the police station, which sounds like super minuscule right now, but like at the time that was like everything to me, right? Because I had lost my dogs, I had lost all of my possessions, I had lost everything that made me comfortable, you know what I mean? I had been filled with materialistic things that fed me comfort, and now it was all torn from me, and now I had to share everything when before I had to share nothing. So it was a huge culture shock, right? And this is about the time, like, I took my first drink, I was laying on the garage floor, and around 10 o'clock at night, so the man who had kidnapped me and molested me was still on the run. He had not yet been caught. And America's Most Wanted was on at the time, dude. And my story aired at the time, and I'm looking at it, and I was like, holy shit, dude, that's fucking me. You know? And a bunch of fear came over me, and a bunch of anxiety came over me, and I couldn't sleep. This is about the time I really started having nightmares, like thinking he was going to come and find me and kill me, or I didn't know what I was thinking, you know? I was just covered in fear, and I was this little kid who had no idea what was going on, so my dad didn't know what to do with me, and he did the best that he could. And what helps him sleep, dude? He gave me a drink or sour apple puckers, you know, and it helped me sleep. And that was like my major culture shock, dude, which led into a bunch of like rebellion and feelings of like, you're not going to do anything to me that's going to hurt me any more than I've already been hurt. Like, what are you going to do? Beat me up? You know?
Yeah.
Dude, like, it'll stop hurting when it stops hurting, you know?
Yeah.
So I went through life through the next few years, just super rebellious, getting kicked out of school, stealing, lying, cheating. And that was my life for a long time.
And then I'm having trouble remembering exactly how it happened. Your dad came to Arizona, right?
Right. So I had, at 13, I had been arrested for a residential burglary and hate crimes. And I went to the California Youth Authority.
Didn't you steal a car too?
Me and my dad got into a fight, right? And here's a short story. Me and my dad got into a fight, and he beat my ass in the middle of the street because he caught me like outside smoking weed with the neighbors, and he was probably coming down off of meth and beat my ass real good in the middle of the street. And I'm like, fuck this, dude. I'm calling grandma. I'm going to live with my grandma back in Las Vegas. And like, my brother picked me up and drove me to Vegas. And I went and lived with my grandma for a while, but like, I thought the same shit, like I was going to be able to do anything that I wanted, that like, I'm just going to rebel super hard. And my grandma's husband was an ex-sheriff from New Jersey. So like that wasn't going to happen, you know? So like he
got some hard discipline, boy.
Dude, he very quickly kicked me out of the house at 14 years old and was like, fuck you, dude. Like I used to get in through the keypad on the garage. And he like took that off and screwed my window shut so I couldn't get in the house. So I was like, I'll show you.
Yeah.
I know the key code to the side of your expedition to get in. So I like punched in his key code and I stole his truck, dude, and drove it back to California. And like, I'm little now. Can you imagine me at 14 years old, barely see over the steering wheel of this fucking expedition,
driving
back to California. I get pulled over and my dad comes and picks me up and I go to my dad's house. Well, the next day they had arrested me for a crime that I had committed a year prior, and that's that home invasion and first degree residential burglary. So I went to the youth authority for a while, and while I was in the youth authority, I got taught some hard lessons, you know?
Yeah, in Riverside County.
Right, so the youth authority is up in Northern California, okay. but I had gotten arrested in Riverside County, and my dad had moved up to Arizona while I was there, and he sent me a letter before he left a couple weeks before I was getting out, and he's like, hey, I'm leaving, I can't eat, I can't sleep, I lost 30 pounds, grandma came over today, I didn't want her to see me like this, yada, 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 I'm going to Arizona, you're on your own. So I get out and I go to the placement home, and once again, like a group home for boys. Once again, another major culture shock. I had been incarcerated for several months at this time, and they sent me to Ranch Cucamonga to go to a public high school with thousands of kids, and I was not having it, you know. Major anxiety was coming over me because I had been confined to like small classrooms in the youth authority and been confined to small groups of people, and then they're just going to turn me loose. So I ran. I did what I do best, and I ran, you know. Something that was instilled in me in the beginning of like all my troubles was like, let's just remove him from the situation and everything will get better.
Yeah, yeah. So you ran to...
I ran to my dad's ex-wife, and I stayed with her for a while. And then, like, probation came looking for me. So, like, once again, I, like, called dad to rescue me. So I called my dad, and he drove back down to Riverside to come and pick me up from Arizona. But he didn't pick me up. He just put me on a Greyhound bus to go to Colorado. Because he's like, I'll send you anywhere you want to go. Like, where do you want to go? Like, you've been on your own this long. Your life is your life. Which is, at the time, I don't know if that was, like, the wrong thing to do, you know? Like, let me experience it. And he was there to, like, have my back when I needed him. So he sent me to Colorado to live with a friend. And it was cool for a while. I very quickly got a girl pregnant. I very quickly got kicked out of school. I very quickly wore out my welcome.
Yeah.
So once again, like, I'm crawling back to dad, 16, almost 17 years old, a girl's about to have my son, and I crawl back to dad, and the day after my 17th birthday, my first son is born, and I'm drunk from the day before, because I've been partying, like, all week, because it's my birthday, and I'm pretty sure I was at your house.
Yeah, drunk. Yeah. I was going to ask that, you know, like, I'm selfish and
yeah, we were
egotistical, and I was like, wasn't I there, you know?
We were drinking, and I actually got into a fight with Nippy that night, and he was, like, texting my baby mama on my phone, like, oh, why are you with Martin? He's a dirtbag, and I was like, fuck you, and then he's, like, bigger than me, so he beat me up. But long story short, dude, like, when my first son was born, I was not present. I was... getting fucked up, dude. Doing what I do best. I was running from my problems.
Baby, first son is born. You got two sons, by the way. Lucky motherfucker.
I do. And you got two girls, dude.
Yeah, I'm gonna be screwing some windows shut here soon. Don't worry. They won't be on the outside. They'll be on the inside. No, I'm extremely grateful for the situation I'm in. I'm saying I'm a lot. Fuck. So back to Arizona. I remember that. Yeah, I had a nice little mobile home, or I had some roommates. I was just a roommate.
And it was far from nice.
Yeah. No, it was terrible. God. Fucking A. Okay, so Arizona, and then didn't you, you went back to Vegas after that? What?
I did.
Why was that?
Shortly, like, after that it happened, well, not shortly, a few very long months after that it happened, so during that period of time, I had, like, spoke about earlier, I started experimenting with, like, harder drugs, and smoking meth, and taking a lot of pills, and getting kicked out of school, and I think the final draw was, like, I was going to a continuation school at the time, and I put, like, weed plants on all the backgrounds of all the computers, and I locked them there, and I don't even know, I don't even know, like, how I locked them, but I locked them, and I got kicked out of that school. My dad was like, yeah, fuck you, dude. Get the fuck out of here. My mom had just gotten off of parole, so our no contact order had expired. My mom had a no contact order for the duration of her prison term and her parole term, because she was arrested and convicted of child endangerment, and as well as, like, drug charges and aiding and abetting, many other things. We won't go too much into that, but, so my mom was off parole, and my dad was like, well, what do you, you can go with your mom, or you can get the fuck out of my house, dude. Like, and I was like, still this kid, 17 years old. And I was like, well, I don't want to, like, stand on my own 2 feet. I don't want to be a man, dude. Like, yeah. Fuck that. But Vegas sounds nice. Like, when I lived there before, it was kind of cool, you know? Yeah. So, like, I can go attempt to finish out high school. And when I say attempt, it means I can go party at high school, as long as they'll let me stay there and, like, live at my mom's house. And that was my clear intention. So I went to go live with my mom and my sister in Vegas, dude.
I've heard tidbits of stories about that time in Vegas. But there's, like, a YouTube video that you're in or something, maybe?
Dude! I haven't thought about that in a long time. There is a music video that I'm in, where I was, like, super trashed. Like, I had, like, a rapper phase, right? I was hanging out with a bunch of, like, music producers and rappers.
Well, I mean, that was Slim Shady's heyday. Everybody wanted to be a rapper,
you know? So, like, I was, I was hanging out with a bunch of people like that, And I was picking up pills, like opiate pills for dirt cheap, and doing a lot of Xanax and just going to parties all the time, dude. And inevitably, like, I was stealing my mom's Xanax and taking all her Xanax and stealing her money and doing whatever I wanted. So I was nodding out on the couch one day all fucked up, and she thought I was trying to, like, overdose and kill myself. So she, I don't know if that's what she thought, or maybe she was just trying to remove me from the situation, but that's what she told the state hospital, and like, had me committed to the state hospital, because I was still 17 at the time. The next thing I knew, I was, like, waking up in a state hospital in a padded room with a straitjacket on, and, like, just my underwear, dude. Like, that's it, dude. And it was miserable. I was withdrawing from Xanax, so, like, the walls were, like, shifting, and I was hearing shit. I was very delusional, and I was freaking the fuck out. And then I got my phone call after I calmed down, and I called my mom, and I was like, get me the fuck out of here. She's like, well, I've been talking to your dad and your grandma, and, like, they're willing to put you in rehab, but only if we leave straight from there and go to rehab, or that's the only way you're getting out of there right now. So I was like, all right, fuck it, send it, let's do it.
Yeah.
So she picked me up, and I got in the passenger seat, right, and she's like, open the glove compartment. So I opened the glove compartment, and she had me 2 fat-ass joints rolled up. Perfect. I was like, sweet, dude. And she's like, well, I called the lady at the rehab, and they told me to have you as comfortable as possible. So, like, here's a little bit of weed I got you, and you're going to drive yourself, and I'm going to sit in the passenger seat and drink Chardonnay. And so I drove myself to rehab smoking joints while my mom's drunk, passed out in the passenger seat, you know. And this is my first time in rehab. And I can't say that I didn't enjoy it, you know. I was not there to learn anything. I was there to make everybody else happy. But I had fun.
Right.
You had fun. I had fun.
I've never done rehab. But I was court ordered to do some Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, you know. And I think I went to one, dude. You know, I didn't listen to a fucking word that was said, dude. And then I knew this older gentleman who I was quite acquainted with, and he was running the meetings, and he just signed my paper for me, all of the meetings. He was like, here, go turn it in. You're not going to fucking learn anything anyways, at least not until you're ready, you know? And I wasn't, so.
Perfect.
Yeah, fucking out of that fucking situation, you know?
Perfect.
Back running, dude. Right. So you get out of rehab, and what's the next move?
So I don't like inevitably graduate the rehab. They gave me a certificate, but so my 18th birthday was coming up, and that was supposed to be my out date, right? I don't want to say release date because it's not like I was in prison.
Yeah,
but it was my completion date. Yeah. You know, it was my completion date. But I had gotten called into my counselor's office, whose name was, ironically, his name was Dick. And it wasn't like Richard, it was Dick. And that like threw me off. But anyways, he was telling me like, oh, your time's been extended another 90 days. And I was like, yeah, fuck you, dude. So I like raged out, because at this time I had not listened to anything they were saying. Not fixed anything inside of me. So I threw a chair at him.
Yeah, you got... He told you one time something you didn't want to hear, and it was over.
Yeah, I threw a chair at him, and he's like, yeah, you're leaving on your 18th birthday, dude. We're going to give you a certificate, give you a Greyhound ticket back to Vegas, and get the fuck out of here, dude. So I, like, hopped a Greyhound from Palm Springs, California, back to Las Vegas, and it was off and running again. I got a large lump sum of money on my 18th birthday. And
from the state of?
From the state of Arizona.
Good old AZ. I'm going to pay for your fucking mistakes.
And it wasn't a super large sum, but at 18 years old, like $50,000 is a lot.
That's a lot of money. That's a down payment on a fucking house, dude. So, you'd be living cushy for the rest of your life.
And it was quickly gone. You know, it was very quickly gone. To drugs, and so I went back and I tried to live with my mom for a little while, because it took me a minute to get some my money situated, and the night I was there, I was like, yeah, I'm going to the studio. I'm gonna go to the studio. I want to go be with my music, and it was total bullshit. So I just went out and partied, and inevitably the next day my mom kicked me out of her house, and I went and stayed with some other friends, friends and a girlfriend of mine, and just went from there, you know. I slept with an ex Dallas Cowboy cheerleader, which was super sick.
Blew 50 G's. How much did she cost?
Nothing. She paid us. Dude.
Wait. What?
Yes. So listen to this.
So an ex Cowboys cheerleader.
Yes.
You're 18 running around with 50 G's and she pays you.
Dude, so this is after my money is gone. this is after my money is gone. I have like the nice car, all these things, right? But me and my friend went to a party for another friend's birthday, and his girlfriend's mom was an ex Dallas Cowboy cheerleader. She was like 44 at the time, like super older, way blown out, dude. Like totally shot out, bro. Like
okay, but. But, like, how was it? How was it?
It wasn't bad.
Okay. You hear that, ladies?
It was not
blown
bad.
Blown out Dallas Cowboys cheerleader. She's still doing all right, you know?
Was not bad. It was not bad. And I had fun, you know? But inevitably, like, my friend, I had gotten into a relationship, and my girlfriend was like, yeah, no. You're not going to continue to do that. So I was like, and I'm super codependent. So I was like, okay, baby, like, I won't do it. I'm just going to send Mike over there to do it. Like, we still need this money coming in.
Yeah.
Like, she would give me $400 to get her an 8-ball of Coke, which in Vegas, like, I was tripling any money from nothing.
Yeah.
So I was doing that, bro. And I thought she was going to die on me. Like, drinking Imperial Rosé and snorting an 8-ball of Coke. I thought her heart was going to blow up.
She's a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader, dog.
Bro, she's invincible. Yeah. Like, so I sent my buddy back over there, and his house, his mom had went back to Romania, right? So his house, like, all the power was off. They were going to foreclose on his house, and it was going to shit. So I was like, dude, you need to go over there and tell her, like, you need 10 grand. Like,
So she would take him on all these blue collar dates and to like nice fancy restaurants and shit. And he told her that he needed 10 grand, bro. The next Monday, he came to me and handed me 2,500 bucks. I just pimped my homie out. Like,
tight.
To a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader, bro. And it was super fucking sick. Although, like, that money was gone very shortly after that.
Yeah.
I had been scared to do more Xanax, so I started doing heroin because I still needed to sleep, you know.
Oh, God. Heroin.
It was a fucking nightmare. Shortly coming up after that, my the trial was starting, dude. Like, to where, like, it was my time to go testify. Like, he had
I remember that.
He had been arrested in the guy who kidnapped me. His name is Arthur Vitasic. He had been arrested in Texas under the name Richard Looper.
Why Richard, dude? I'm a great guy, okay?
and like, I can laugh about it now, but I, like, pondered on this for so long. The irony of picking a name like Dick Looper. Dick Looper. to be an alias, you know?
Yeah.
I went back and I did that, and I stood in front of him, and I said what I had to say, and I made my peace, but I did not yet forgive and let go. My pain went on for a long time after that.
Yeah. So, is this guy still in jail?
Dude, he got over 30... consecutive life sentences plus 559 years just here in the state of Arizona. If he was to ever live that, he's not going to, but if he was to ever live that, he would then have to face charges in Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico, California, and Nevada. Every state that he took me to or any other child that he molested, and there was over 30 victims.
Holy fuck.
He had been molesting kids before I was born.
Wow. So he's still alive, unfortunately.
Yeah, every once in a while I look him up on the DOC website and see what he's doing, if he's getting in trouble or whatnot. I've tried to write him a couple of letters, like, before I got sober, I tried to write him a couple of letters, like, trying to seek within, like, forgiveness so that maybe I could heal. But I never got any responses.
But,
you know, I don't even know if they made it to him because I'm his victim, you know. I don't know how all that worked, but I tried to do it.
Wow. Trying to process a lot of that information. So you how many letters do you think?
At least a good half a dozen.
and
all of them were not nice. Don't get me wrong.
I mean, obviously, you know.
All of them were not, like, on the path of healing. The last couple definitely were, but yeah.
Yeah. I, my personal opinion, you know, why are our taxes fucking paying for him to still be alive, you know? But, you know.
Dude, I didn't start paying taxes till 2 years ago, so that's irrelevant for me.
In a humanized, evolved human society, you know, yeah, we probably shouldn't kill people. Capital punishment isn't all that great. But I do like see a need for it. Off topic.
Right. No, I totally feel that. But on the flip side, I definitely feel like what he is enduring is way more punishful than just killing him.
Yeah. It's kind of like an easy way. I can see that. All right. I lost track of where we were. Vegas, bunch of money, and you came back to Arizona after that. Or did you go back to Colorado?
I came back to Arizona briefly. And here's a quick funny story. As I came back to Arizona briefly to live with... So, like, my mom, I ran out of money, went back to stay with my mom. My mom wasn't having me, like, smoking heroin in her bathroom. So she kicked me out again, of course. And my girlfriend left me. So I'm like, fuck, what do I do? So I came back to Arizona to live
with one of the other victims, right, of this guy. And then I was like stealing her perks and they kicked me out. his mom's perks, you know.
Why do they just give people drugs, dude? Fuck.
I don't know. But at the time, like, it was, I liked it.
Yeah. I mean, thank you for giving them drugs, but, you know.
Right. but, yeah. So I went back to Colorado to try and do the dad thing, you know, and it was working for a little while. I got a job installing solar systems, for $12 an hour underneath the table, which at the time was a lot of money.
I'll work for $12 under the table right now, dude. Fuck it, dude.
and I was learning a trade and I was having fun and just smoking weed, going to work, paying bills, coming home until I ran into some drugs again, you know, into some hard drugs. And once again, my best survival mechanism comes into play and I like call dad. I go back to live with my dad in Arizona.
And he had bought the mobile home by that time, right?
Yes, my dad had bought a mobile home by that time with a lady. But by the time I had gotten there, they had split up.
It's hard for me to remember. I mean, like, I know that you came back, but I don't remember. it's like you weren't there, and then, you know, next thing you were there, we were doing drugs, you know?
And then the next thing, I was gone again.
Yeah. Well, it happened a couple times. And then, you know, I was gone. Came back one time. You were on probation, I think. Or you were just drinking or something. You're just drinking and smoking weed, dude. And then here I show up. We get some pills. And off to the races again, dude. I think we've relapsed each other a couple different times.
Probably. Definitely. So, most definitely.
So I thank you for, you know, hooking me up. And also, like, God damn it, you're an asshole.
Yeah, the back and forth went on for a long time, and it was super difficult. I think the next move that I made was to go to Florida. My mom had fallen over in a ditch, right, in Vegas, and she was found, and the ambulance came, and they found a tumor in her brain. And I'm beginning to believe that I can heal, right? So I'm like, oh, I'm gonna show up for my mom.
You can heal.
Like, I can heal from the past. I can mend relationships. I want to show up for my mom, so maybe I can let go of this hatred that I have for her, right?
Okay.
As well as I'm looking at it as a trump card.
Whoa, you can't use that term no more, dog.
I'm looking at it as a trump card to Ace of Spades. Big Joker, baby. I'm looking at it as a trump card, so maybe I can get away from the cycle that I was in. Maybe get away from the drugs or try another geographical change. So I moved to Florida because my mom had brain surgery and she's now recovering and doing chemo and stuff like that. And like, I'm gonna go be the best son I can be. Which did not work out. Did not work out. I was out, and I know what you're referencing. I was out on pretrial services for an aggravated assault and a strong arm robbery at the time, and I was still going to court.
Yeah, which we don't have to get into it, but I think those charges were probably a little pumped up, you know what I'm saying?
Dude, definitely pumped
for,
up.
For what you did, you know. Those guys are fucking assholes.
Dude, like, they say that I, like, beat him up, robbed him for $4 and a scooter.
And
I was 19 at the time, and the kid was 15. I, like, pushed him over and stole his scooter for, like, 10 minutes to get to work because I was running late. And that was that. which was, like, a dick move.
Yeah,
you know?
Dick move dick for move. Sure.
Dick move, dude. For sure. But, like, it did not have to lead me to prison.
No.
No. Like, but so they let me telephonically appear to those court dates, and I went to Florida, and they don't have heroin in Florida as available as they do out here.
It's unfortunate.
Their heroin is better, but I found Dilaudin.
You
Really?
So, okay. I started doing a lot of Dilaudins and more pills and just keep doing the cycle, you know? And
yeah.
Keep doing the shit that I was doing. And very quickly, my mom kicked me out again. And she's like, fuck you, don't come home. And I had stopped calling into court because, like, that's an inconvenience.
Yeah.
To call so that it keeps me out of jail.
Yeah.
That is an inconvenience. So I go to Walmart and I get caught stealing a lighter because obviously, like, I needed to light my crack pipe. So I got caught stealing a lighter and they arrested me for that and found out that I had a warrant and they extradited me back here to Arizona, dude. And that was the most miserable ride of my life.
In a van,
dude. In a fucking court van.
In a fucking van.
In a fucking van, dude.
From coast to coast.
It was fucking miserable, dude.
Cuffs on hands and feet?
Dude, we had cuffs and shackles, and I was shackled to 12 other dudes. Like, it was fucking miserable.
What did they feed you?
We stopped at, like, Whataburger, Chick-fil-A. So, like, that was cool.
Yeah, that was cool. That's cool.
So they had a hub in Davis County, Kentucky. That's where it was at. That was, like, their central hub for PTS, prisoner transport systems. On the East Coast crew, they, like, gave us cigarettes, and we were smoking cigarettes in the van and shit, so that was kind of cool, because I had already been locked up for, like, 5 months, and I really wanted a cigarette, and got super lightheaded,
yeah,
whatnot, yeah. But I got to Davis County, Kentucky, and then the West Coast crew was not so nice.
Fucking hard asses.
Dude, hard asses, bro, and we were packed into a smaller van. There was only 8 of us, but, like, packed into a smaller van, driving across Texas and Oklahoma in the middle of the summer, hot as fuck.
No AC. Did you have windows?
No windows. And they had, like, AC in the front of the van, but they had, like, plexiglass separating us from them. Yeah. And a plastic tube, bro. Or, like, a metal tube, like, you put on the back of your dryer. Over the air vent, blowing air back at us, which was not working, to say the least.
It didn't work,
to say the least, but I...
need to call the engineers on this one.
Dude, I drove all the way across the country, stopping in state to state to pick people up and drop people off, and it took me 20... And we stayed the night in some places, in some county jails, which was, like, a lot of those people. A lot of those places are not for skinny little white people.
Yeah.
Not for anybody, but definitely not skinny little white people, like myself. It was yeah, rather experiential. So I get back here and then I sit in the county jail here in Flagstaff for 10 more months. And I get out on probation, you know. I get out on probation and I fuck that off too.
Get off from probation in Page.
Yep. I get off on probation in Page, Arizona by Lake Powell, and I quickly began doing what I was doing before, you know? Nothing changed, dude. Nothing changed at all.
Yeah.
My probation officer was like, oh, well, you're gonna go do this in jail rehab called Exodus, and if you complete that, like, we'll let you off of probation, right? So it's like, oh, yeah, I'm gonna do it standing on my head. Like, I'm gonna do it for you, whatever you want.
So this will get me out of trouble. Let's do it.
Right. So I did that and got out and started doing the same fucking thing over again, dude. You know, and very shortly after that, I was on my way to prison.
For how long?
I did a year in prison.
Huh. Okay. You're in prison. You get out. Back to Page?
Back to Page.
With your dad?
Yep.
And what are you doing now at that point?
I am... I get out of prison. Oh, dude, I have already gotten loaded before my dad ever picks me up. So, like, here's the funny thing. Here in Arizona, like, prisons are very political. So, like, on my way out, all the white boys, like, beat me up, and my legs are black and blue, right? And I get out of prison, I'm, like, walking super funny, right? And I'm wearing, like, the prison blues, prison jeans and deck shoes and a prison blue shirt. If you've been to prison, you know that I just got out of prison. So this guy at the bus stop in Phoenix, I was on a Greyhound bus coming up to Flagstaff, and This guy at the bus stop's all, you just got out? You want to smoke a joint?
Tight, dude.
Right. Oh, yeah. Let's go. sweet. Perfect. And out in the parking lot, we met his buddy, and they had a bottle of Crown Royal. So, like, I had taken a shot, the first shot of booze I had had in over a year, because I sat in county jail for a while, too. And I was super fucked up, dude. Like, throwing up in the Greyhound station bathroom, waiting 5 hours for my layover for my next Greyhound bus. And I come up here to Flagstaff to see my parole officer already dirty on smoking weed. My dad picks me up like 3 a.m. at the Greyhound station, and we stay here in Flagstaff and go see my parole officer. And he's like, all right, dude, you're going to check in Tuba City once a month, and we're going to drug test you. And yeah, that's that. Go get a job.
Did it check in at Tuba?
So Paige doesn't have a parole office. They only have a probation office. And parole and probation are two separate entities. So yeah. Parole is controlled by the state. Probation controlled by the county. So I went immediately back to doing the same thing. Like, I only have to piss once a month. I can beat the system. I can get loaded for three weeks out of the month, and then detox on my dad's couch, and then go see my PO, and then come back and do it all over again.
Tight.
Which did not work.
Right? No.
I was doing that for a little while, and then I'd like detox on Suboxone, and then go see my PO. And then I came back and I got arrested for a paraphernalia and a possession of narcotics charge, and back to prison I went to go finish out my DOC term, as well as another 7 months on top of that for my new charge. You know, I had to go serve that out, so I went back and I did that, and then I got out and I started doing it all over again. You know, I think I had a couple of small jobs here and there. Like, my dad would hook me up with a job, or like a family member would hook me up with a job, or a friend would hook me up with a job, and none of them ever worked out. You know, most of them were in kitchens. A couple of them were like driving forklifts or working on cars, but I could never show up. You know,
yeah.
I could never show up because something else was more important.
Yeah, I've had a little bit of the same problem. I got lucky, dude. I never got caught for any of the stupid shit. I just got lucky, you know? That's what I boil it down to. It wasn't in my cards, I guess. There's like 2 years where I'm here and you're there. What led you?
So yeah, let's fast forward a little bit. You know, fast forward to I think it was 2016 or 17 or some shit.
2016.
Yeah.
So
because
my sobriety date is like 3 days after the last time you hit me, so.
I was like coming over to your house all the time, and then you disappeared, and then shortly after that, I had missed a shot of heroin and meth in my arm, you know, and I got a bad infection, and I almost died, dude. I was airlifted from one part of northern Arizona to another part of northern Arizona, from Winslow here to Flagstaff, and had a temperature of 113. My arm was swelled up as big as my leg, and I was pretty much dead. I was brain dead. My brain was boiling. I woke up in the hospital, and I had already had one major surgery on my arm. I was going to have another because I had a blood infection called cellulitis due to the drugs were just eating away at my arm.
Yeah.
Right. So I had had that, and then you and John came over and seen me, bro, and brought me some Chick-fil-A, dude, and nothing changed, dude. Like, my intent and my want was to change my life, right? Was to change and want to live a different life, but I was not willing to do the work. I was not willing to change it. I still wanted the old feelings, but with the new life. Like, I wanted all the shit that everyone else had, but I didn't want to work for it.
How'd that work out?
It didn't. it didn't work out. It didn't work out at all. I you guys told me to call you when I got out, and all my intention was to it until I was handed a bag of pills for the pain in my arm. And I called my dad, dude, and before my dad even came, picked me up, dude, I'm still in the nightgown for the hospital, like in the bathroom, snorting these pills. So my dad came and picked me up, and I went back up to Paige, and I started doing the same thing. And
although, so your dad picked you up?
Yeah, yeah.
See, I was under the impression somebody else had picked you up. I don't know why I always thought that.
He did not pick me up. He came by and...
he dropped off cigarettes and stuff for you. Yeah, I remember that.
Yep, yep.
I got rid of a dirty rig for you, by the way. I had to call my sponsor because of it, so...
Oh, did you get rid of a dirty rig for me? Thanks,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, no problem.
Was it in my bag?
You gave me your shit.
Oh.
You're like, here, take my stuff, check it, make sure there's nothing in there.
Oh, see, like, my intention was to, like, to fix my life. Like, yeah, my intention was to get well, you know, like, and, no, I thank you for that. I mend you for that.
I couldn't even touch the bag, dude. I had to call my sponsor, and I was like, hey, dude, you got to do this with me. Because if I find something, I might do it.
There's something in here, I guarantee.
Yeah.
But no, I thank you for that, Mike. That proves that my intention behind it was all pure, but the power... I was powerless, 100% powerless.
You weren't ready yet.
Was not ready. Far from ready.
That's what I chalk it up to.
Went back and did the same thing for a couple more years, right? And I get arrested a few more times for the same old shit. And I'm out on pretrial services at this point, right? I get arrested and I go to jail. And I'm sitting there in the courtroom and talking to the judge, and I'm like crying. I have a toothache at the same time because my teeth are rotting out of my face because of smoking meth and just not taking care of myself. And I'm crying, and my dad's in the courtroom at the time, and the judge asks my dad if he's willing to let me out on third party release. So they let me go, and I'm waiting to get drug court, right? So like my attorney tells me, don't fuck this up, or you're not getting drug court. You're going back to prison. You're going to do like 5 years. Because at this time, you're like a category 2 or a category 3 offender, which makes everything that you do aggravated. And it cranks up your sentence. So I get out and I immediately fuck that off. You know,
you know, I thought you were going to make it. Okay. Because I saw a picture of you when you got out of jail and you were chubby. You know, so I was like, oh, he's been eating good. Maybe this is it. Because, like, you know, you see guys get sober and that's like the first thing that happens. You know, they gain a little bit of weight.
Right,
you know,
right.
Start looking healthy.
No, I'll chalk it up to like all my jail sentences and rehabs. And like over the period of time that we've been talking, there's been countless amounts of rehabs and detoxes and things that I can't even keep note on. There's probably been a rehab that I don't even remember going. You know? I just chalk it up to as a vacation, you know? It's a little vacation so I can go hit harder, you know? I can just go right back and I can actually get high and I can actually get loaded. And that was my mentality, and that's why nothing changed. So in 2018, I was out on pretrial services, which I had violated because I wasn't doing my UAs and I wasn't checking in because I was getting loaded and doing the same old shit. And I had just gotten my fix, and I was walking home in November. I think it was the day before my birthday. In November, and it was kind of cold, so I was like letting out a prayer, and I was thinking like, man, what if like I was actually to do drug court and like be sober, and like what would that life be like, you know? And I was like talking to whatever God I believed in at the time. I was probably talking to my bag of heroin. which is like the truth. That was my God, dude.
Yeah, yeah. Well, God, a God, God, a higher power. It's a whole nother conversation.
Right, right. So like I was doing that, and I was just kind of probably talking to myself, whatever, about like what it would be like. And then a canine unit drives past me, and I damn well know that dog couldn't like smell my dope from the car, but no. He started barking. And that gave the cop attention to look at me. And it's a small town, so like every cop knows me at this time. Like my cousin's a fucking cop up there. So like they know me. So I could not hide. I was busted. So I go to jail, and when I got there, I was sitting in that isolation cell, and I let out whatever prayer I had left, and I was like, you know what? I can't fucking die, obviously. I'm invincible. I've been through hell and back by now, but I can't keep living like this, so something's got to give, you know? So I came down here to Flagstaff, to the main jail, and I began to transform my life, dude.
Yeah. The transformation was beautiful, by the way. Thank you. I like where you're at today.
Thank you.
So what was it like, living this second life? Where did it start? It started with that prayer, obviously, on your birthday.
Oh yeah, dude. Obviously, it definitely started with that prayer.
Now, was there a change mentally?
I don't think that was my mental change. My mental change came very shortly after I had gotten out of jail. So I sat in jail for a little while. And when I was in jail, I got into programs, and I was doing the reentry program here at the Coconino County Jail that I really mend. I love it, and I recommend it to anyone that's in jail to get in there and actually take in what they're saying and learn some shit. Because once I started doing what other people were suggesting of me, and I was listening, and I realized that my way was fucked, and that like maybe other people knew what was best for me.
Yeah.
Things started to change, dude. And like my drug court plea that was like gone. Like I was going back to prison. My attorney had already told me, do not fuck this up. You're burnt if you do. My drug court plea came back, dude. And by me doing what I needed to do, like whatever was looking out for me, a power greater than myself, Jesus Christ, Allah, whatever the fuck it was that was looking out for me, dude, was looking out for me and seeing that I was really trying to transform my life. And I got my drug court plea back, dude, and I got out of jail, and I moved into a sober living house here in Flagstaff called the Foundation House, which was, like, totally fucking miserable, but it was exactly what I needed.
Yeah.
And I just started to do the do.
Yeah, you know? And there's genuine people there who are going through similar struggles and genuinely just want to help.
I think that, like, a main conversation that happened when I first walked up those stairs is a good friend of mine today. Like he's one of my best friends in my life today. And I walked up the stairs and our first interaction was, he said, "What's your deal?" I said, "Heroin." He said, "You're fucked." And that's the way that I can understand it. You know, like I was a little bit healthy, physically, but like super, super mentally sick still. And he told me, "You're fucked, but like if we kind of hang out together and try to figure out how to live life better together, we can do this deal, you know, like we can get unfucked, you know." And I was like, "Oh man, no one's really explained it to me like that before." Like people have just been like, "Oh well, you gotta go to AA and you gotta like do these steps and you gotta get like sober and just don't get fucked up." And he's like, "No, if we kind of stick together, we can get unfucked." And that's the way that I needed to hear it.
Yeah, It blows my mind sometimes, some of the nonsense information people pass on is like,
dude,
good, you know, like, just don't drink. Like, no, it's not that easy. You don't, like, I don't have any fucking control over myself. And there are very few people who, like, understand that on a level, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, get some more coffee. Running dry over there. So
I'm in a fucking drought.
You're going through the Foundation House. Good old Foundation House.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah. There's been a lot of good people who I've known that go through the Foundation House and are living an amazing life today, you know? Help is there when you're ready to help yourself. For anybody else listening. So you're going through the Foundation House. You have a wife now, right?
I do. I do have a wife now, and she's going to be brought into this conversation here very shortly. I'll just skip ahead, and I'm going through the Foundation House. I'm doing drug court, and I meet this girl. She's not a girl. She's a woman.
She's a grown woman, and she's pretty fucking cool. I'm not gonna lie. A grown ass woman, you know. She could put up with you. She's aight, you know.
Yeah. She puts up with some shit. And I meet her, and And to be honest, is like I showed some interest, right? Like I was I wanted to get my dick wet, you know. I was like fresh out of jail. I had not really like I had, even before I went to jail, I hadn't been with anyone in a while because I was like worried about sticking a needle in my neck.
Yeah, you're clean off heroin. It works now,
right? It works.
It works.
We've been there, bro.
right. So like I wanted to do that and. And I asked her for a ride to Walmart, right? And most of my intention was to get a ride to Walmart so I can get some black Dickies because I was like slaving away working graveyards at Denny's. And my other Dickies smelled like a fucking grease pit. My black pants smell like a grease pit, which you know because I lived with you for a while and they fucking stank.
Yeah, you did. I'm used to the smell. I've cooked before, you know? I got a beautiful wife in there who's not worked in the back of a kitchen in a restaurant, you know? So,
right. So,
it bugged her.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It bugged me.
Yeah. But, I think the worst part was your fucking shoes, dude.
Probably. Yeah. But anyways, like I wanted to ride to Walmart to get a pair of pants and she had asked me a couple of questions and I guess I answered them the right way, you know? Cause the next day we had hit it off and started hanging out and this leads me to what we were just talking about a minute ago is like my aha moment, you know, I had gotten caught out past curfew, which is kind of a funny story. I got caught out past curfew over there, lying to my surveillance officer, which is now really a good friend of mine, about why I was out because I wanted to go get some butt, dude. Like I was trying to hang out. I was trying to get laid. And I lied to my surveillance officer when I could have just told him, like, hey, I want to go get some butt. And he would have let me. If I was just honest with him, he would have, like, been like, okay, be home at XYZ time. Yeah. And it would have been no big deal. But I, like, thought I could manipulate the system still. And I was not willing to change. So he caught me. Long story short, I had to bring it up to the judge at drug court on my next court date. And I got sentenced to 12 hours of community service, and I had to write a paper. I had to write a paper about the five things I wanted to get out of recovery court, right?
Those five things?
And I applied those five things to what I wanted to get, like, out of my new life, right? And I don't remember exactly what they're like. I know I still have the paper because it was a huge part, right? But, like, the main things were, like, I wanted to recognize the person who was staring back at me in the mirror. I wanted to know, like, what I like to do, like, outside of getting fucked up. Like, because I didn't know what I enjoyed. Like, I know I like riding skateboards, but have I ever done it sober? I know I like listening to music, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, I know I like doing a couple of things. Like, I like cooking, but, like, most of the time I was cooking, I was fucked up. So, like, what do I really enjoy doing? I didn't fucking know. I wanted to be a man of integrity. I wanted to be someone that can show up when called upon for advice or help. I wanted to show up for my family. I wanted to be trusted. I wanted these things, right? And then I got to really like focus and home in on like what I wanted out of my new life. And that was my aha moment and gave me a goal to work towards and two solid feet to stand on, you know? And doing that fucking 12 hours of community service was miserable, dude. On top of like everything I had to do for the sober living house, my 40-hour-a-week job, everything I had to do for recovery court. I was a busy man already, and now I got to do fucking 12 hours community service in a week, dude. Like, goddamn, dude. And it rained that week, dude. So like,
yeah.
Picking up trash in the fucking rain, dude. It was miserable.
Yeah. I always thought trying to find dope was hard, dude, and living life today is difficult, dude. You know? I mean, it's beautiful.
It's blissful.
It's
difficult.
God, it's difficult sometimes. Sometimes I just want to say fuck it, man, you know? Yeah. But I don't, dude. I got responsibilities, dude. I have people that depend on me to be that.
Right.
You know? You know, sometimes you just got to pull up the bootstraps, dude. Dude,
lace them up and keep it trucking, dude.
Yeah. Well, so you're sober. You did it. You're fucking here. How long you got?
I'm coming up on 2.5 years. Been sober since November 3rd, 2018. So I got like 2 years and a few months, something like that. Like 820 days or some shit. I have an app on my phone that tells me every day and gives me a little inspirational quote so I can make it through the fucking day, dude.
This year was the first year that I didn't realize my date was coming up.
Yeah.
I didn't know it until I got a fucking notification on my phone, you know? And you're 4 years clean. I was like, holy fuck, dude. It didn't even...
And it's a little difficult for me because, like, my clean date is my birthday. So, like, I always remember, dude. I'll never forget. But, like, life today is amazing. I completed drug court exactly when I was supposed to. That was my only fuck up, was sneaking out that one night, you know. And I did everything I was supposed to do. And I suited up and I showed up. But the most important thing was, like, I was willing to receive everything that everyone was giving me. And not just materialistic things, you know. Like, and I fucked up along the way. Like, I got kicked out of the foundation house, dude. And, like, you let me come stay over here for a few months. And I, like, miserably stunk up the house. And fucking... Yeah. But it's exactly... My path was exactly what I needed. And then I got a shitty fucking apartment, dude. And I lived there for a year and a half. And
listen, this is a shitty fucking apartment, too.
Dude, mine was way shittier. Like, brick walls and shit. Like,
Yeah. I'll give you that. You can have that.
But, like, now I have an amazing life. I just had my second son just turned a year old, dude. And I now work in a rehab. And I'm working into a case management position, hopefully. It's amazing, dude. I get to help people that are trying to recover from the same thing that I was going through, dude. It's fucking amazing. Well, one of my long-haul childhood dreams is to, like, help kids that have gone through something similar that I had, so that they don't have to live the same life that I had to. And a lot of people that come through this field, you know, like the field of behavioral health, go through some of the similar shit. Of course, they're not children, but, like, they're the same people. They're like, I was a fucking 10-year-old kid until I got into recovery, dude, until I got sober.
Yeah. That's beautiful. So I always found it difficult because I had my stints of, like, going to therapy and stuff, and, you know, for a little bit, but it just didn't feel, like, authentic. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was just talking to this person who had no idea of, like, the real struggle that I had gone through, you know? Like, and, like, yeah, my story's a little different. It's you're a fucking man of men, okay? Because you've been through some shit. Like, my shit is minuscule compared to yours, you know? And I'm not trying to compare. We all go through our own things. But, like, you know.
I guess it's just a level of conditioning, dude.
Yeah. But, like, this lady that I was talking to, and she's an amazing lady. She really is. If she ever hears this, you're amazing. But... you could not relate, so you could not help me, okay? And I forgive you, don't worry. No, I'm just kidding, that's a dick move. But yeah, man, I just, like, there's no better person to help somebody than somebody who's been through it and came out winning on the other side, you know?
Absolutely.
And I mean, fuck, dude. 2 years is 2 years is not a very long time, dude. And, like,
no.
you've gotten back everything and then some. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have a beautiful son, dude. He's fucking badass,
dude.
He's a little hellion, but he's badass, dude.
During these 2 years of short sobriety, these short 2 years of sobriety and recovery, and just not even that in general, just living a new life and a different life and a different lifestyle, I had never had any of these things.
Yeah.
Right? So I it's not like I got anything back. I've just gotten everything like a normal human being wanted, like ever would work for. Like, any man over the age of 18 that was wanting to live a normal life, I only have the things that he would achieve. Like, those are the only things that I have. Like, I have the ability to help and relate people that have been through similar things than I have. But that's just the field that I work in, that I strive to work in, that I am passionate about.
So, you know? Is that stressful? Because I mean, I have friends besides you who are in the same business. You know what I'm saying? They work at rehabs, or they work in, you know, behavioral health.
Right.
I know a couple of people who work in the jail. One thing, why I always steer clear of it, because like it's like spiritually draining. You know what I'm saying? Like you're at work dealing with this all day, and then you're supposed to get off work and like work on yourself. You know what I'm saying? Like the reason I didn't do it is because I was, you know, I didn't know if it was healthy for me spiritually. Like, I don't know if my question's making sense.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And before I even got into this field, when I was just like prospecting it, right? Because like before I'd ever worked for the company that I work for now, or the team that I work with, let me say that, because we're a team, the team that I work with now. Before that, I was looking at other companies and trying to do different things. And I was talking to my sponsor at the time, who's like a really good friend of mine, who was once my probation officer, who caught me sneaking out to go get some butt.
We all know who you are.
We all know who you are, buddy.
I love you.
You're beautiful. But anyways, like I was talking to him, and he's like, dude, like, you're going to get confused that like working with those guys is going to be helping you. But at the end of the day, you're going to be drained. And it was difficult to like separate the two, you know, because yeah. I had that hard conversation with him about like, because a lot of my personal growth comes from helping people outside of work. Right. And he explained to me that I'm going to get very enmeshed. My personal life and my work life are going to be enmeshed working in this, and I'm going to have this feeling inside of me, or this part of me, which is going to feel that work is my personal stuff. So I had to like double down on my personal life, you know. I had to double down on like making sure I was spiritually right and doing my meditations and doing what I do to get by, you know, and to feel better, but doubling down on that shit and trying my best to separate work and to separate this as a passion versus like me just being able to continue to live like a quote unquote normal fucking person.
Yeah. I'll never be a normal person, dude. I don't like.
No, we're fine, you know, dude.
You don't shoot meth in a McDonald's bathroom and think you're fucking normal.
No. Dude, you know?
Anyways, dude, thank you for coming and doing this with me.
My pleasure.
It's going on YouTube, so everybody will know that you're a badass motherfucker.
Dude, and anyone who watches this or hears this, just know that like you can do that shit too, dude. It's like it's not easy, but it's simply laid out for those, if you just reach out for help and reach out to the right people for the right kind of help, dude, it's fucking doable, you know? You can come from the fucking pits of despair, dude.
Yes.
Like, from the jump, my life was fucked, and now, like, I have a beautiful home and a beautiful wife and a beautiful child and two fucking obnoxious dogs, dude, and, like, and I get to, like, play video games, and I get to go to work, and I get to drive a car, and I get to, like, leave my keys in a different city at my father-in-law's house, dude. Like, I have a fucking father-in-law. That shit is crazy.
It is, right?
So, I thank you for having me here. It was an honor. Yeah, dude. Amazing.
Number one, baby.
Number one.
Number one.
If you ain't first, you last.
All right. Let's play some fucking video games.
Peace and love, baby.